بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. سليمان ابن عبد الملك ابن مروان. The headquarters are in Baghdad, and then they will come to pay the respects to Medina Munawwara. Please come to Medina Munawwara and his desire was to meet someone that had seen Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam or the Sahaba Kiram. So he asked someone that this might desire. So there is one person, Abu Hazim. This is the person that is closest. So there was a period in time that people wanted to frequent the company of the pious, righteous. It was not too much, but for short times, short moments, but they will sit. They will come in, they will bring along their children, and an affinity and a muhabbat will build up, start off, and thereafter it grows. There is a start and there is an end. So the meeting, although it may be a small little child, but the meeting is like planting the seed. So there is some affinity, there is some muhabbat that has built in. Now that with time it will grow up, it will show. And it was a general style. Mawlana Manzoor Ahmad Nu'mani Rahmatullahi, he had visited our country. So Haji Bhai Paria Sahib Rahmatullahi had asked him, "You can see the challenges and the difficulties that we go through in this country. What type of fitnas, what type of liberalism, women, men. So it is part of our duty to see our children through. One is material, but one is to get our children online, to give them a direction. It's also part of our duty. Because as we are leaving, then we want to see our children following the same way, or even better than us. So now that you have visited this country, well, I came to this country around 74, I think so. So I gave about two or three pieces of advice. One is this, that until the child doesn't become fully responsible, then you see that you are on his side. If he wants to go for some recreation, some sports, some whatever, then be around with him. Don't let him do things independently. There must be some scrutiny, some supervision over the child. You leave the child unsupervised, what happens? Then his friends get the better of him and they lure him. Then one thing leads to the other. Sometimes his habits changes, right? As getting into drugs, getting into some bad habits. Last week there was a phone. The lady is complaining, son is hitting her, kicking her. Right? So generally this thing happens when the children are unsupervised. They're not guided, they're not supervised. And the parents' greatest concern is just wealth, material development, security. That becomes the concern. And the children are left unsupervised. Now what you expect, this is the result. Child is earning good for himself. Right? But he was left not supervised, so this is the end result. So you don't blame the child entirely, and you don't blame the mother entirely. Mother is also to be blamed, and the child is also to be blamed. You get what you had paid for. You had paid for this, you had worked for this, so this is what you get at the end. So Mawlana's one advice was that don't leave these children until they are not responsible. Deen-wise, deeni-wise, dunya-wise, they are responsible. Now you leave them, inshallah, they'll go well. But you just gave them the freedom. Go and do what you want. They don't know what is right company, they don't know what is bad company, they don't know what is good habits, what is bad habits. They don't know how to manage their wealth. They don't know how to manage their time. They don't know how to manage their relationship, friends. They don't know all these things here. And you just gave them the freedom, and then you see a product at the end. Then you want to know where this thing started off from, how it came up. So the right thing is, assume responsibility. You fathered the children. So until the child is not fully developed, he's responsible. He understands I've got a responsibility to Allah Ta'ala, responsibility to myself, to my wife, to my dependents, to my children. I've got some responsibility. Then you let him carry on. Now he's understood what's responsibility. So when he's understood responsibility, he won't let the next person's daughter suffer. He won't put her into problems, because he's understood what his responsibility is all about. But he doesn't understand responsibility. He doesn't even know how to talk. If he's not hurting the wife physically, then he's mentally traumatizing her. He's saying something that's keeping her uneasy. And now it becomes even worse. You do this and 1, 2, 3, talaq, finish. You do this and talaq. So it's all boils down to the not having a sense of responsibility. So sometimes they are behaving incorrectly. Sometimes it is that they are watching the wrong material. Now the wife is watching all these things and she's getting traumatized. Okay, is the man interested in me or not interested in me? So that becomes a reason for the physical self just deteriorating. Okay, women see things differently as how we see it. We think, oh, it's just a little bit of entertainment. What's wrong with a little bit of entertainment? And she mustn't get too deep into my business. That's how you will think. But she thinks differently. She feels, well, it looks like the man is not interested in me any longer. If he doesn't like me, he must tell me he doesn't like me, and he must carry on. So that's how she will think. So the parents, their problem is, they're not teaching the child responsibility. So similarly, if the husband is acting incorrectly, alright, now someone is smoking, he's smoking something that is not right. Outwardly he seems to be a good person. But the wife discovers the man is doing something in the corner, maybe not frequently, but he's doing it. Now how does she feel? She feels very, very insecure. And that insecurity, it impacts on her health. Now at night she's thinking with the same worries. Day the same worries. What's happening now? And then when she is worried, then she will not be able to impart the right type of instruction to her children. Direction, instruction, mannerism, she can't pass it because she's not right herself. And she's not right because the husband is not right. She's not feeling well. Now how do you expect her to do all this thing yet? Then at the end, when you see your children as delinquents, then you don't blame anybody but yourself. That you didn't assume full responsibility. So, Mawla Manzoor Sahib, rahmatullahi, this was the first advice that he gave Ajibai Sahib, rahmatullahi, that they want some pleasure, they want some entertainment, let them have it, but under some supervision. Show them nicely, you're not acting like a police over them, you're not guarding every move that they can't even breathe without you. Let them have the freedom, but let it be supervised. You are with them, or their mother is with them, someone that is very, very responsible is with them. Otherwise, how long it takes for a person just to change? Just left him. He has got hooked onto something, then he's gone. He's taken a different line. You've taken a different line. You're wondering now where this thing came from. There's a second bad habit of many men. The third bad habit is, now you've got a little bit of a problem with the wife, or you want to amuse, but you don't understand how, in what parameters you must amuse. So you'll talk about a second wife. You know you're not going to do it, but now a little bit of amusement, a little bit of entertainment. Now she's taking it seriously. And perhaps now I'm too long with him now, he's got bored with me, he wants a change, he wants a variety. So he's not interested in me. You want to amuse, there's other ways to amuse, but not traumatizing her. Now, this is the type of phones that you get all the time, women are complaining, it's what he's saying. Then it's one thing that we haven't learned a sense of responsibility. Today is that man's daughter that is in your marriage. Tomorrow it's another man's, it's your daughter in someone else's marriage. You've been good, inshallah, your daughter will also be good. She will enjoy. But you try and be good to that woman that is in your marriage. You've taken her, teach her what is Islam, teach her good mannerisms, right ways. But all that happens if you've got the time to teach the child. But you want your freedom, you want your space, you want your time. But you want your children also. How can it happen? You want your freedom, and your children are going azad, or going free. How are you going to reconcile? So they definitely need that supervision. Look at a madrasa. You've got a class, but no supervision. What's going to happen? Isn't there going to be chaos, right? In a business, there's no supervision. Absolutely no supervision. I ask you, is that business, supervision, if that business going to go well? The business, that class, that education, that home, that's supervised, then you get such beautiful children coming out. Everybody says it's a bundle of joys to work with this person. But if the parents are so consumed in their own comfort, that in the drunkenness of their comfort, they neglect their children, then they must be prepared to see that type of consequence. So that was the first advice that Maulana Manzoor Sahib Rahmatullah had given, Haji Bhai Paria Sahib Rahmatullah. And the second piece of advice he gave was occasionally take the children to some pious person. So then he says, it may be that they don't understand him, right? Because he'll be speaking at some different level. If he's a bayan, he's speaking at a different level. And they don't have the ability to grasp everything. At the age of 5, 6, 7, 8, they can't grasp concepts so well. Right? But by their coming and sitting in the company of the righteous, they will build up an affinity. And that affinity is like planting that seed. And with time, that the seed will germinate, it will sprout out, it will come up. Now you see the child has an inclination towards righteousness, goodness. But the initial seedling was because of this person. See? That's what they say. Teri talab bhi kisi ka karam ka sadqa hai. Ye talab, ye kadam to khud uthta nahi, uthaye jate hain. See, that you got that little bit of liking, muhabbat towards Allah Ta'ala. It's not your own achievement. It's an accumulated effort. Sometimes your parents, mainly it's your parents. Sometimes it's the effect of some pious person's dua. Some jamaat came in, they were crying in that area. They cried for the hidayat of that old area. And we don't know, there must be an old person, pious person, righteous person in a jamaat, and he cried. And one tear was just struck. And then that became a catalyst for a person's life. It just changed a person's life. He began to see things differently. But what was it? It was someone's tear. Someone was behind this whole thing. So the company of the righteous. Al-Qama rahmatullahi alayhi, he's sitting in the Masjid of Damascus. New person, businessman has come into Damascus, right? Comes into the Masjid. Came for his business reasons. But now look at the primary concern. I come here, I have to do this business to market my products. I'll be here for some years. I have to market the product, right? But coming into a new area, see what is his primary concern. His primary concern is, Allahumma yassirli jaleesan salihan. Allah grant me a good companion. So I'll do my business, but then I've got one person, one righteous person, Allah wala person. So timelessly I'll go to him, and I'll get some direction. I won't get lost. I won't go off the track. Because this one person that I will refer to or will talk to, I can see the level of taqwa, is a consistent style. He's not materialistically orientated. He is mostly for deen, right? He's got no other agenda. And I see a consistent style in him. He's not a person that is emotional, just getting outbursts. No. Straight, consistent. There is a pattern in him, there's a direction in him. So sitting in him will bring me some direction. So a foreigner coming to a land, but then what is his primary concern? Imagine that individual has just left, right? He just comes into an area. So obviously, mankind is gregarious, right? He wants some association, some socializing. He can't, generally you won't want to be alone. You have to mix up. So, if you want to just mix up with all and sundry, maybe your choice of friends is the wealthy, right? When your choice of friends is the wealthy, now you're looking at, oh, he's got a Volvo, he's got a Mercedes, he's got a Jaguar. What I got? I got a Scoro. So I can't fit in the circle. So when I can't fit in the circle, what I must do? So his mind will run. So I need to fit within that circle. What must I do to fit within the circle? Either I must take my brother's car, he's got a Volvo or something, and come to this party with this car. So I'll show an impression. I'll create an impression. I remember during the school year, in standard 7, you know? So was the Muslim teacher, he was taking us for English, right? So he's telling us now, speaking to the class, how he got engaged. So this was a girl that I was spotting now, and I needed her to accept the proposal. So we went, I should pass the shop, the girl would be there somewhere. So each time I'm going past, I'm coming with a different car. Today I came with a Volvo, then that was 69, I'm talking about, 68, 69. So now he's coming with one Volvo one day, one Mercedes, now that girl's getting impressed, you see. So the type of circle that you choose for yourself, you are seeing now that's what they want. So in order to fit within that, so you're going to either come in borrowed car, or second is you'll do some financing, and the financing generally nowadays is interesting, right? Isn't it? Financing is interesting. What else? There's some interest involved. Right? If that's not the case, if it's not a borrowed car, it's not interesting, then you will borrow something, you will get into the good books of one friend. Become too pally with him. You want to curry favor with him. And after currying favor with him, then you'll ask for favors. Give me a loan or give me something, you know. So you've been his yes man and talking for him all the time until you got something out of him. And all three are not good. To impress someone incorrectly, to mislead, that's haram. Interesting and financing is incorrect. And a friendship built just for commercial reasons, just to pull the money out of the person, really is not right. So all is not right. Everything is not right, this whole thing. Now, where this thing starts off is because of your preference. You wanted that type of company, so you would behave like that. So money becomes the main concern in your life. And then that doesn't become just a concern. It becomes not an obsession. It becomes a phobia, you know. I don't have it. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? I don't have it. 2 million, I don't have it. What's going to happen? So you feel so insecure. You have to hit the target to feel that feeling of security. You don't make the target, no security. Make the target, now you feel secure. So that's the thing that you will live for, you're going to die for. Your whole life, that's going to be the thing that's going to govern you. In the meanwhile, in the process of getting all that, sometimes the child is getting messed up, the daughter is getting messed up, something's happening. You're not concerned, as long as I see the figures. See that everything else can fall in place. But I must see the figures. So the choice of company, see, this old people, is what they had in their lives. One person came to study at Saharanpur Madrasa. So, as he's coming to the Madrasa, after Asr, normally in most Madrasas, it's free. You're free in Deoband, Saharanpur. If you just go about 203 meters out, you'll find on farmlands. So people will prefer walking towards the farmlands. It's greenery, you feel nice and refreshed, and after that half an hour, 40 minutes walk, you'll come back for Asr Maghrib Namaz. So this person, he came out of the Madrasa, convert. He was a Hindu, came, accepted Islam, nice, righteous, consistent, everything. I came out for the walk, and as he's progressed into the fields, and he sees one crematorium. And near the crematorium, he sees some pundits, you know. And as they're progressing, see, the pundit, as he progresses, then he must undress, he mustn't wear any clothing. That's a sign now that he's progressed. Mustn't cut off his hair, mustn't wear clothing, you know. There must be no response. Even if a young girl touches him, absolutely no response. So if he's reached that, you know, that anybody touches him, but there's no, absolutely no response, so now he's reached the height of righteousness. He's reached the height of spirituality. So that's how they measure spirituality, that there must be absolutely no response. So I saw that group of people all dancing and all that, all naked and dancing. So that caught his attention. As that caught his attention, now he didn't realize that they were doing something spiritual to capture him. He was admiring them, and they were watching what's going on. So they were doing something to capture this person. See that force of association, and what he does to a person. We think, you know, it's just a normal thing, but we don't know that there are some secret arts also. Some secret arts on how to capture people, how to captivate people, how to turn people. And this can happen in different ways, not in one single way. Sometimes it's direct. Secret art, what you call it, magic or sihr. Sometimes it's direct. Sometimes it's through the media. There is some secret art that is played out in the media. It's done in such a discreet way that you can't understand, but you feel your heart is just inclined. But you can't understand why your heart is inclined towards it. So there is something secret that is worked in the whole thing to capture your heart. There was a student here, an American student. So he tells me that he was in the university for 4 or 5 years. Just in curiosity, asked him, "What have you been studying?" He said, "You know, political science." So it seems a little bit interesting, you know, what they teach you. So he says, "Well, there's a lot of things I teach you, but I'll just tell you one thing that you can get an understanding, how to capture people. How to capture people." Now they study this thing so much. He says they found out that from the guts of a cat, that thing releases a certain type of a smell, right? And that smell attracts the opposite gender. So the male will release that, or the female will release that, and the male will get attracted. See? So they discovered that thing will release a certain type of a scent, and the scent will attract the female or the male, right? So now when they captured this, now they used it now, you know. In perfumes they used it. This woman is very ugly now. No complexion, no shape, absolutely nothing. But now you fell for that ullu. Why you fell for that ullu? How did you fall? So it was the perfume that they used. She wore that perfume. When she wore that perfume, you felt attracted. Now you can't give a logical explanation what attracted you. But you just got attracted. But you see now how they're using it. It's political science. Now see from where to where. Right. Then he said they didn't stop there. Then they used it. They thought to themselves, how else to market this thing? You know, we need to market this thing even more. So they say that this eating houses. So you'll find that that client that is coming in, he just wants to eat and eat, and there's no satiation, not fully satisfied. He eats and he goes on eating, but there's not full satisfaction. He says they use it in those places, in the blowers, they use this scent again. That you go there and you don't feel that full satisfaction. There's that crave, eat some more. Now you finish and you think, why I ate so much? You can't give a logical explanation to why you ate so much. Then they realized, all right, this was one of the reasons for American obesity. Why are they becoming so fat? Youngsters like, you know, 25 years, 150 kgs, 200 kgs, they're weighing that. Like a small ox. So how they growing so much? So this obesity, where it came from? So you see this company, companionship, and what it does to the person. And how important it is. How important you supervise that child. Our Buzuranuddin say that you are sending the child to a foreign environment, school, high school, then university. Right? There are going to be certain concepts passed on to the child. See, I was talking to one person who was in the education for many years. Sometimes you get one odd person, so I like to know what they're doing, see what's up their sleeves. One is what they show, and one is what is up their sleeves. So he says to me that the education system, right, in all secular countries, secular education, it is not so much about the education. It is about mesmerizing into a certain mindset, you see. So you must get a certain mindset. You must think in a certain way. That's the whole idea. So they call it education, but what they are building, what they are making in you, that you must think in a certain way. You must behave in a certain way. This must be your ideal in life. This is what you must chase for. This is how your life must be designed. So this is the thing that they are building you. Therefore, you, when you hear about this pharmaceutical company, it's how they design the thing, that you're going to eat a certain type of food, so you'll build up certain type of sicknesses, then you will become dependent to their drugs. So it's a whole vicious cycle. It's a cycle. Anybody that went through it, you'll understand that it's a vicious cycle. You'll eat this type of food, this is the type of lifestyle. When this food, that lifestyle, and these are the expected sicknesses, this is the drug company, then the drug company carries on like that. So you see how they work it. Then they will in turn sponsor the education. See, they sponsor the education, they get the returns. They sponsor the education, and they get the returns. So he's telling me, this person, education, that his words, it's pure manipulation, and there's very, very little education. So the person that's coming into the schools, he can be educated, but he's not grounded. You know, we say, in our language, we say, Bharela cha gharaila ni bharela. So he's educated, but you ask him whether he's grounded. Can he think? Can he reason? Can he see things in perspective? He can't see it. Yes, he's educated. No, there's no two ways about it that the man is educated. But is he really grounded? Can he understand? Can he reason? Can he analyze? Can he see things in perspective? He doesn't have that ability. So the mistake is that education was misconstrued as intelligence. So education is not a guarantee for being intelligent. Intelligent is something else, and education is something else. Two different things, poles apart. So what we're getting at is this person here, and he's watching this whole thing. He's come to learn here in Sahanpur. He's watching this whole thing, this whole pandits, they're all dancing around, and he's watching them. And as he watched them for 3-4 minutes, now his heart is pulsating, you know, it's beating very fast, and his heart is demanding, you know, I must become a Hindu again. Just like it was a proper Muslim, consistent style, everything was carrying on very well. Now something has captured his heart that I must become a Hindu, and it's captivating him to such an extent that to move one foot is like moving a mountain. It became so difficult for him. Just one foot. But to move one foot is like moving a mountain. Somehow or the other, he battled himself, he battled, and he came to the madrasa. See the effects of that influence, school, university, college, and we think it doesn't have any influence. It's coming in, but there's no influence. It must have its influence. Type of teachers, the tutors, all of them, what is their mindset? What is the type of mindset? Some children from a small madrasa, youngsters, 17, 18 years of age, someone did a survey that the children coming from the madrasa, all of them were looking at novels, and nowadays you'll say WhatsApp, phone, all that type of material they were looking at. But then they saw a group of children going to a private teacher on their own, you know, teacher that is teaching privately, and he's teaching all secular subjects, but he's absolutely private, independent. But all those children becoming tahajjud guzar, they're muttaqi, they are looking at haram, and they all tahajjud guzar. So now they try to work it out. Now here we're sending him to this so and so person, but then they are looking at novels, they look at WhatsApp, they're looking at porn sites, and here we are sending him, he's an independent teacher, he's got no structured school or something. But they all become in tahajjud guzar, they ask him what is halal, haram, they're so cautious. they discovered that the teacher here in the school, the teacher that was teaching independently, he was himself muttaqi. Himself, he was pabandh of tahajjud. So the product was the same. And here, although he was teaching at the madrasa, outwardly it seemed to be dini, but he was in wrong himself. So that same spirit was being passed on to his students. See the importance of the tutor. That tutor is the middleman between the head and the parent. That tutor comes between the head and the school and the teacher, the child, who's the in-between. The in-between is the tutor. So how important it is for the tutor to be right, the teacher to be right. If his mind is wrong, then the child's mind is getting corrupt. If his mind is right, the mind of the child is right, going right. Now, to add to this entire confusion, one specialist doctor was here about 3 months ago, some Badar doctor. He was specializing in all good dieting and all that. So I asked him to have a small session. So holiday times, about 4 or 5 starts, say, give us a small session. So he brought about this topic of evolution. The same doctor. So we went to ask him, alright, in the high school that they're offering it, he said, yeah. In the universities that they're offering it, yeah. It becomes like an examination subject. So then we went on to ask him, alright, if they are teaching it at high school level, they are teaching it in the university, what they're teaching? Evolution. Evolution is what? It's against the concept, against our belief. We believe in Adam alayhi salam, that's how we came in. And this is saying something else, right? Totally something different, totally different, right? So the child is required to learn all that, the arguments that support this concept, and then it's made as an examination subject. So to get through the matric, he has to learn that, he has to write in favor of that evolution. So then we asked him, right, is he required to write on this? Yeah. University, first, second, he must do it. He must do these things here. So I asked him, what is he writing? Is he writing something about Islam? Or again, is he writing something that is amounting to kufr? He said, well, I didn't think of it, but this is clear kufr. Because the Quran Sharif is saying something else about Adam al-Islam and how he came in. And this chacha is saying something totally different. This concept is saying something totally different, opposite. And then he's writing in support of it, the child. Although his intention is to get the marks, whatever the intention is, irrespective. But he's writing to refute this argument, to refute this concept, or in support of it. At the moment he's asking for marks, but he's writing not to refute this thing here. He's writing in support of it. So now, what happened to the iman of the child? And you know, you'll be surprised whether the child is going to any school, from any school, at least I would say, to be very safe, more than 7 out of 10 children, they're coming out with a corrupt mind. They will not say it, but yes, when they're becoming a little bit more conscious of akhirat. I know, I got doctors coming, topi, going in jamaat, everything else. And after about 10 years in their practice, then they ask, well, what about the Darwin's theory? So up to that point, they were suppressing this thing, they were hiding it. They couldn't talk about it because they felt they'll get embarrassed. But now when it came to the crunch, and they felt that it is opposing their belief, you know, and they can't flush it out of the system, now it's getting concerned. 10, 20 years now, in the practice, made the money, but now he's getting worried about the akhirat. Then he's asking, imagine, so long he suppressed this, just for his ego. After 15, 20 years, then he's asking, oh, what about this? You see, that poison was inserted into his brain. He couldn't flush it out. And then he realized after some time that I can't flush it out, I need some help. But in what state was he living for the 15, 20 years? Umar radiallahu anhu brings in some scriptures. Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu seated in the presence of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And Umar radiallahu anhu said, see, I want to read out some of the articles in the scriptures. And he started reading something. In the meanwhile, Abu Bakr is observing what's going on. Abu Bakr cautioned Umar, don't you see what's happening? Nabi Sam is getting really worked up. Don't you see that? Until then, Umar then realized, he says, Radina billahi rabba, auzubi, min ghada billahi wa ghada bi rasuli. He heard those statements that, you know, that I'm pleased with Allah Ta'ala, his Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and I ask Allah Ta'ala's protection against his wrath, the wrath of his Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Then Nabi Sallam explained that even if Musa Alayhi Salaam were to be alive today, and you left me and followed him, the dalaltum will all go off. The ulama explained this hadith that until your belief is not grounded, you're not strong, you're not grounded very strongly, then to do a comparative religion is a part of misguidance. You've gone off completely. Because, you know, you take something on, what you can manage, but I can't take it on, and I'm taking it, I'm Muslim, so I'm saying, no, I'll take on Mike Tyson in a boxing match because I got Iman. Is that right? You didn't do that level of training, and you want to take that person on. Your Iman is not so strong, and you want to go and learn this thing here, whether it's Daven, whether it's any other religion, but you want to take that on, and the arguments there seem to be palatable to you. You don't have the suitable answers to refute them. So, Iman mere hai, na kufr mere hai. You're not in Iman, you're not in kufr. Where are you then? Iman says, you either take me, or get out of one or two. I can't be in between. So, this person here, he came to the Shaykh Rahmatullah Ali, we're talking about this youngster here, 20, 21 years of age. So, he comes to the Shaykh Rahmatullah Ali. Okay, you know, this feeling is irresistible. I can't resist this to become a Hindu. I went and seen this, perhaps they threw some vibes against me, and now there's an irresistible feeling. I can't resist this feeling to become Hindu. So anyway, Hazrat Rahmatullah Ali wrote a letter and sent it to Hazrat Raipuri Sahib Rahmatullah Ali in Raipur. Raipuri Sahib read the letter, prescribed some zikrs for him, etc. After a few days, he says to Hazrat Raipuri Rahmatullah Ali, agar meri bimari ki dawa aapke paas ho, to mujhe bata do. Varna yahan par main aapke roti aur saran khane ke liye aaya nahi. See how sincere this person is. Although he is a convert, he was sincere. He says, see, if you got a cure for my problem, tell me, you got a cure. I didn't come here to eat the bread as a tarkari here. Now, he got Mawlana Raipuri Sahib Rahmatullah Ali on the right note, he got him. Mawlana Raipuri told him, see, me to kuch nahi. I am absolutely nothing, right? لیکن اللہ تعالیٰ کے بعضے بندے ایسے ہیں اگر آپ کے دل کی طرف اس طرح سے اشارہ کرے کہ تیرا دل خدا کی یاد سے جاری ہو جائے تو ایک دم سے وہ جاری ہو جائے گا. آئی ایم ایبسلوٹ نتھنگ, آئی ایم اے نان اینٹیٹی, رائٹ. بٹ دے آر سم سروینٹس آف اللہ تعالیٰ, دا لو آف اللہ تعالیٰ از پرسیٹنگ سو اسٹرانگلی ان دیم, اف دیر از پوائنٹ ٹوارڈز یور ہارٹ کہ دا لو آف اللہ تعالیٰ, بس your heart must just pulsate with the love of Allah Ta'ala. Immediately your heart just turns it on. And he says, that person went into an ecstasy. So the ishq of Allah Ta'ala, and the peace of all that Hindu things, everything is flushed out. And he didn't even tell him about Raipuri. He cut a line straight away, he came back to Sahanpur, studying like a normal student. But what I'm showing you, what I'm impressing, is the company of the righteous. As Mawlana Thanvi Sahib says, ملفوظات, پہلے زمانے میں جس قدر زور تربیت کے اوپر تھا, جس قدر اہمیت تربیت, صحیح تربیت, صحیح اصلاح کے اوپر تھا, اس قدر اہمیت تعلیم پر نہیں تھا. The amount of emphasis that was on تربیت, make the person understand, make him Muslim, not just by theory, no. See, where the mistake is, you know, I tell the students that you are going to university, what are you going to study? Business management, right? So if you did that course in 5 years, right? Business management, right? So you learned management. But when you learned management, the business just came in. Now you have to work for 30 years to get that business. That 5 years was just spent to learn the management. Now you'll have to spend another 30 years to get that money. So the same now, you came for ilm of deen, right? So it took you about 5 years or 10 years to get that ilm. To get that deen, you have to spend about 40 years to get the deen soaking into you. So what happened to you is that you felt, I got ilm, so I got deen. The mistake was, he felt that he's got ilm, so he's got deen. So it doesn't work. When you say business management, so it took you 5 years to learn the management, that will take you 30 years to learn business, right? And that will be your luck if Allah gives you that wealth. Doesn't happen. You always see that he definitely gets that wealth. He doesn't get it. He'll get it or he may not get it. Deen is a guarantee. You work for it. Man arada al-akhirata wa sa'ala sa'ya wa huwa mu'minun fa'ulaika kana sa'yu mashkur. Allah says, your efforts are well appreciated. No matter what ilm you've got, but you worked. When you worked, then your efforts are well appreciated. So we are talking about this Abu Hazim, rahmatullah alayh, and he is ushered into the presence of Sulaiman bin Abdul Malik, rahmatullah alayh. Maybe because of the burqat of Abu Hazim, rahmatullah alayh, things are just flowing, right? Though I didn't want to speak to about all these things here. So, Sulaiman is the king. Now he needs to start off a dialogue. He needs to start off a conversation. So, he says to Abu Hazim, rahmatullah alayh, what is this rude attitude? This type of uncultured attitude. That I came here and you didn't come to meet me. So Abu Hazim rahmatullahi says, he's talking to the king. And the kings in that zamana, the type of control and power they had, nobody could challenge them. They were so strong, right? So Abu Hazim rahmatullahi says, excuse me, before this day, I didn't know you and you didn't know me. When I didn't know you, nor did you know me, so what is this? You're saying that I'm impolite and I didn't have the decency to come and meet you. What is this? How does it ever feature? It would have featured if there was an acquaintance. But there's absolutely no acquaintance. I didn't know you, you didn't know me. And now you say I'm being impolite. So that king got the shot unexpected. So he looked towards Ibn Shihab Zuhri, rahmatullah alayh. So Ibn Shihab Zuhri says, no, Abu Hazim is saying 100%. So that the king had no feet. Now he asks this king now, wealth, power, authority, everything he's got. So he asks Abu Hazim rahmatullah alayh, why is it that we fear death so much? Today I was doing a tafsir. قُلْ إِنْ كَانَتْ لَكُمُ الدَّارُ الْآخِرَةُ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ خَالِصَةً مِنْ دُونِ النَّاسِ فَتَمَنَّهُ الْمُوتِ. So, you know this, there's two approaches to speaking to a person. When you talk to a person, there's two approaches. One is a normal approach. Normal approach is you discuss the merits of the argument. You will say your side, he will counter it. And if you see some merit in an argument, you will accept it, right? So the Quran says he speaks to the Jews, and it speaks to them appealing to their conscience. Appealing to them, right? That you see, Nabi Sam is recorded in your books, right? But you still reject. And what do you say? Qulubuna hulf. What are you saying? That our hearts are very well, very protected. You know, they're in wrappings, they're very protected. So anything alien can't get into our hearts. What are they saying? Anything alien can't get into the hearts. That means Islam is not coming through because Islam, na'uzubillah, is an alien thing. So the Quran says, is reasoning with them, alright? If you say this, so the one thing is, Balla'anahumullah. You people are under divine curse. It's not because of your heart being protected. And the proof of your being divine, under divine curse is, one is, you are distorting the word of Allah Ta'ala. Your own scriptures, yuharrifun al-kalim. Just for a miserable price, now one of your following coming to you and he wanted something to be given in his favor. So he wrote something in his favor you got some material gain and you prepare to salary. So to distort your words, whether the word itself or whether the meaning, but you prepare to distort, give an explanation just to suit the person, just for a paltry worldly gain. So aren't you guilty of this? Number two, aren't you guilty also of يَكْفُرُونَ بِآيَاتِ اللَّهِ وَيَقْتُلُونَ الْأَنْبِيَاءِ, and then you are killing Anbiya, assassinating them. Isn't it a fact you're doing this? So if you say that your hearts are all very preserved, then how did you embark on this killing Anbiya, distorting the word of Allah Ta'ala? So the fact of the matter is لَعَنَهُمُ اللَّهِ, you're under divine curse. Anyway, this is one approach to a sensible discussion. In a sensible discussion, you're supposed to be thinking, reasoning, understanding and accepting. But nonetheless, you don't want to accept this, so let's go to a different type of reasoning. إِن كَانَتْ لَكُمُ الدَّارُ الْآخِرَةُ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ خَالِصَةً مِّن دُونِ النَّاسِ. So, one of your claims was that we have got exclusive rights to Jannah. Who is saying this? Jews. Exclusive rights. For all the rights. Nobody else. لَكُمُ الدَّارُ الْآخِرَةُ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ خَالِصَةً. It is reserved for us. Our righteous will go straight to Jannah. Those that were doing unda danda, a little bit punishment, لَن تَمَسَّنَ النَّارُ إِلَّا أَيَّامٌ مَعْدُودَةٌ, they will sit, languish in prison, a little bit of Jahannam, and then they'll come out. So we have got it all worked out. Jannah is ours. Exclusive rights. Why? Because of racial superiority. We've got the superiority. Nobody's got it. Children of the Anbiya we are. So you must be blessed. See? So a lineage is no guarantee. This zaman also, sometimes people take the lineage, just the lineage as a guarantee. So the lineage is not a guarantee. It's a standard. مَنْ أَسْلَمُ وَجَهُ لِلَّهِ وَهُوَ مُحْسِنِ مَنْ كَسَبَ سَيِّئَةً وَأَحَاطَتْ بِهِ خَطِيئَتُهُ. That's the standard. This way or that way. The lineage is not a guarantee. Yes, you can get some help out of it. You're coming from a medical background, parents, uncle, so you will be familiar with medicine, right? You know what is healthy, what is not healthy. You will have a familiarity. But just being in the family, is it a guarantee of you being healthy? Not a guarantee. Yes, you must also subscribe to the same standards for you to enjoy health. But if you know, I am a doctor's child, grandchild, so I must enjoy health. Isn't that foolish? Stupidity, that is. So Allah throws out a challenge against them. In karat lakum darul akhirah, you say that you got exclusive rights for Jannah, right? So we throw out a challenge against you. What is the challenge? Tamannawul maut. All we want you to do is aspire for death. Just say we aspire death. And the Quran said, is telling them already in advance, waliyatamannahu. You will never aspire for this. We're telling you in advance that you're never going to do it. You know, if someone throws out a challenge against your deen, don't you give your life, your respect, your integrity, everything you want to give, right? Why? He's challenged your deen. Here, not a single Jew at that time stood up in the defense of Judaism and said, yes, I aspire for death. That means, effectively what it means, that his belief in the Quran Sharif was greater, his confidence in the Quran Sharif was greater than the confidence in his way. He subscribed to Judaism, but he knew that what is true is the Quran Sharif. That's the standard. Because if I want to aspire for death, I'm going to die. Straight, I'm going to die. So his confidence in the Quran Sharif was greater than his own way, whatever way he chose for himself. This was greater. In Qadla. Quran Sharif is saying in advance, وَلَيَّتَمَنَّوْ أَبَدًا. You're never going to aspire. And true to the word of the Quran Sharif, not a single Jew. They did everything. They fought. They got banished from Medina Munawwara, went to Khaybar. From there they went out again, banished again and again. But for them to accept this challenge, not a one person could stand up and say, in the defense of my religion, I'm saying that I am prepared to say that I aspire for death. See the truth of the Quran Sharif. It stands till today. So we're talking about this Abu Hazim and this Sulaiman bin Abdul Malik. So Sulaiman now is just to switch off the topic, you see. Because one side he already got smashed down, so he has to come a little bit on this side. So he says, why do we get so afraid about death? You know? When someone talks about death, we don't hear the topic. So we get overwhelmed with fear. We don't talk about it. Talk about a kabristan, don't talk about it. تخت کے اوپر بیٹھنے کے لیے تیار ہوتے ہیں لیکن قبر میں تخت پہنچانے کے لیے گھبراتے ہیں. To sit in that lofty position, call it a تخت, right? So they, everybody wants that position of wealth, position, recognition. But to pass that plank into the grave for your own father, hey, bad luck will come, man. Bad luck will come. Can't do that. We must have some butter. No, no, hey, bad luck will come. You can't abhor it.